welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed the light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us on the path where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together to create an evolutionary upwising to address problems rather than defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. In these times that seem to be leading toward both economic and ecologic collapse, what if there were one simple thing that could help us shift our course to a life-affirming civilization living and thriving inside the web of life? Well, it turns out there is such a thing. And when people hear about it, they usually have two immediate responses. First, wow, it's hard to imagine that this one thing can do all of that. Second, why didn't I know about this before? We're talking about agricultural industrial hemp, not to be confused with smokable cannabis. In recent years, medical cannabis has become legal in a number of states, and recreational use is now legal in a few places as well. Not to detract from the medical or even the entheogenic uses of smokable herb, but in the long run, it's going to be hemp itself that will have the most lasting impact. My guest today is someone I know well, really, really well, my wife Trudy, who has immersed herself completely in agricultural industrial hemp as a panacea, as a healing for our physical world and our body politic as well. So thank you and welcome, Trudy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Good. Yeah. Well, you know, you're calling your program and your platform Hemp is for Everyone. What do you mean by that?
Literally, hemp is for everyone in that it is one of nature's most amazing gifts, prolific, profitable, and healing to the economy and the ecology. Absolutely the most. It's been here for thousands of years, like 12,000 years. And it's the one thing that provides all of our earthly needs for food, clothing, shelter, medicine, biofuel, and needs of the earth itself.
Meaning it helps to heal the soil as well.
Well, one of the things that hemp does is right now in this carbon, all the carbon that has been released from fossil fuels that is in the air, soil, and water, hemp actually gathers those with its deep roots and then actually sequesters that carbon in the soil. So it does that, pulls it out of the soil, it pulls the carbon out of the soil, air, and water, and sequesters it.
Wow. Well, we're going to learn a lot more about hemp than I think anybody listening knows at this point. Another question. How is it that hemp became your calling? We'll get more into the details, but I'm curious always how people find their calling.
I was just as surprised as anyone, the most surprised and delighted once I started looking into it. It started probably about 5 years ago. And you know, I could say a couple things. There was nothing about hemp in my high school yearbook. that I would be interested in hemp. And my parents were from Germany, were farmers. And so this is about, hemp is all about the farmers, everything from the grassroots up and all peoples and communities, both in growing it, processing it, and using it, distributing it and using it. It's, the more I looked into it, and all of this is on the web, the more I looked into hemp, the more excited I became and realized with my background in holistic health, clinical nutrition, and metaphysics and esoterics, I realized, oh my God, this plant does unequivocally restore the ecology and will renew the economy. Always has.
Now, there seems to be a bit of confusion about the difference between agricultural industrial hemp and smokable marijuana. So why don't you help us clear the air?
Clear the air. Okay, first of all, marijuana is just a smokescreen.
Yeah.
In the best sense. There is, my understanding is, and it's from what I've been able to glean, is there's cannabis sativa. And then there's two designations under that. There's cannabis hemp and cannabis, or cannabis sativa and cannabis indica. And the cannabis hemp, by definition, will contain no more than 0.3% THC. And only really the only medical uses of cannabis hemp are CBD oils, which are in high amount of hemp, which is non-psychotropic. And cannabis marijuana has various ranges of THC plus some CBD, a range of CBD, and more importantly, for cannabis marijuana, it has 180 plus other cannabinoids that are all in different combinations for different ailments and different conditions and that type of a thing. So cannabis marijuana is definitely for health and well-being and medicine. Cannabis hemp is for food, clothing, shelter, medicine, and biofuel.
Now, to clarify, THC is the what actually gets you high. So
exactly.
If it's low in THC, you may have healing, the healing powers of the CBDs.
Yes.
That doesn't get you high, but it does other things physically.
Yes.
Now, in terms of hemp.
And it's specifically, it's the cannabidiols in hemp, that is specifically used for seizures, epilepsy, and things of that nature. Very specific, as are all the cannabinoids for specific ailments.
And so the hemp, there's a difference also between the hemp plant, even though they look alike, the hemp plant and the cannabis marijuana plant. What's the difference between these two plants?
Well, we all know what cannabis marijuana looks like.
All of us. Everybody listening.
Everyone.
Knows that. Yeah. These days.
If not, it's like get with it.
Get with it.
So the interesting thing with cannabis hemp is there's actually hundreds of different cultivars or seed strains. And there's two types of hemp plant. The one is the hemp seed plant, which usually grows about 4 feet tall and spreads out. And an acre of a hemp seed plant will produce about 3 tons of seed and 300 gallons of hemp oil. Now, a hemp industrial hemp plant, entirely different looking. It can grow very tall and thin, 10 to 14 feet tall. I have heard 25 feet tall, 100 stalks per square meter. And what that does is it was always used agriculturally as a weed to combat weeds and to actually choke out weeds, because when you have something that dense growing that tall, it chokes out the sun. And then all those weeds naturally compost, and then the hemp's deep roots take that nitrogen and fix it into the soil and aerate the soil and recondition the soil. And that's how hemp was used agriculturally as a rotation crop to keep the soil healthy and to keep the weeds down. You didn't have to use pesticides ever with hemp.
Now, what's interesting is that what happens when you try to grow hemp and marijuana in the same location?
Oh, well, the thing is, if there's hemp and cannabis, marijuana and cannabis growing in the same area, within a 2.5 mile radius is what I've read, is that the pollen from the cannabis hemp goes over to the cannabis marijuana and turns it into cannabis hemp and changes it.
So in other words, cannabis growers who are growing weed do not want to have industrial hemp in their location because it's going to pollute their crop.
Yeah, it'll definitely change and alter their crop. And the thing is, there's a lot of respect for the Emerald Triangle. And there are certain areas, you know, and where it is farmland, and that's what you're going to be growing is agricultural industrial hemp. And here's the other thing. The important thing between the two plants, the hemp for seed, which, spoke of that. Well, the tall hemp that they used for agricultural rotation and weeds, that hemp has the biomass of hemp fiber. About 1 acre will have about 1,600 pounds of hemp fiber biomass and 2,000 pounds of shiv, the inner hollow core of those stalks, which you grind up to make hurd, H-U-R-D. And that hurd, you'll get about 2,000 pounds per acre, 2,000 pounds of hurd per acre of shiv, which you can then use for hempcrete homes, animal bedding, and hemp fiber with resin to make car bodies and what has now been used as fiberglass, so to speak, much stronger, much superior. The thing about hemp that is amazing is that it has about a 120-day growing cycle, which means 4 months, which means an average of 3 crops a year, depending on climate. A place like Colorado can only grow 1 crop a year because of the climate, which means in 120 days, you can have a complete harvest of hemp. So what does that mean? It's easy. It uses 1/3 or less of the water. The fiber that comes from it is the strongest fiber in the world, and it's used to make the most superior paper, clothing, and you know its strength because the main thing it was used for back in the day was rope and rigging for ships and the Navy and the canvas sails, which even with that exposure to the strongest fiber in the world, it took about 3 years of seawater and salt air to degrade that, where you can't even talk about cotton or anything of that nature. So it's superior strong fiber.
And it's a very interesting similarity between the word canvas and cannabis.
Yes, and it's actually canvas is French for cannabis. Canvas is French for cannabis. So that's where that correlation came. That's why it's even called canvas.
But how long have humans been cultivating cannabis? And
at about 12,000 years ago, there was a meltdown. Here it is. Mm. Yeah, 12,000 years ago, there was the Holocene warming. That's when that began. And the glaciers that melted from that is most of them found seeds that had been dormant and inaccessible for years and years and years, many years. And most of this, where cannabis reemerged, was in Central Asia. And by far, China has the most advanced technologies in growing for cannabis hemp. And in fact, the whole thing in China was, back in the day, hemp was so valuable that the seed cultivars were so guarded that if you actually took any out, that was punishable by death if you took any seed, hemp seed cultivars out of China. Now, on that note, Thomas Jefferson was deft, shall we say, at going to China and sneaking out hemp seeds that he brought to this country. And he and George Washington had some of the largest plantations. The definition of a plantation, by the way, is pretty much 2,000 acres. And Washington was growing 2,000 acres of hemp back in the day, and Jefferson was growing 1,600 acres of hemp.
And they say that the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp paper.
Hemp paper, which is the strongest paper in the world, by far. And also, back then, back in the day, homespun was all hemp. There was no cotton. It was hemp. Levi's were all hemp back in the day.
And we understand linen as well, which we imagine is flax, has also been...
Back in the day, linen was hemp.
Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Trudy a little bit more about how it came about that hemp became illegal. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, you know, your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman, I'm back with Trudy Behrman. We're related through marriage. And Trudy is rapidly becoming an expert on agricultural industrial hemp. So here's my question. if hemp doesn't get you high, why was it made illegal along with marijuana about 80 years ago?
It was a corporate coup that actually, and it was money and greed to get hemp out of the picture because it's a superior product and an answer to paper and building material and oil. It's by far the most superior biofuel on the planet. And so it started in the early 30s with William Randolph Hearst and Charles DuPont. William Randolph Hearst is the one with all of the paper mills and forests, and he didn't want the competition with hemp. And also DuPont had all of the exceedingly lethal bleaching chemicals for paper, and also petroleum. He was interested in petroleum, of course, so they didn't want the competition with hemp. That was really their end game. So what William Randolph Hearst, with his mistress Marion Davies and connections to Hollywood and money, he created the movies Reefer Madness. And it was a series of about 15 different movies. It was not just Reefer Madness. It was constant repetition of, you know, someone who smokes marijuana is going to kill their family, you know, and is crazy and this kind of like thing. And as we know with George Lakoff, when you have enough repetition of something, people start to believe it. So with all of that repetition and insanity that was stirred up regarding marijuana, at the very end they said, oh, and hemp is illegal too because hemp is marijuana, when it isn't. It doesn't have the THC. It was simply done. The whole Reefer Madness was a smokescreen to make hemp illegal.
So what is marijuana? Where did that word come from? Why marijuana?
Marijuana is a word that was used. It's from the Mexican, from the song, you know,
Cucaracha.
Yeah. And it was used to actually slander, and because it's a slander, marijuana, and to when actually cannabis is actually the most amazing healing sacred plant on the planet medically. And so it was quite wrongly used to say that, you know, people get crazy on it and do all these kind of things only for the reason to make hemp illegal and put that into the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937.
And, you know, they what happened was, obviously, associating marijuana with Mexicans, associating it with blacks. People,
oh, yeah, it was a lot of racist and stirring up a lot of fear, yeah, and hate and anger, but mostly fear. And when you put people into fear, as Bruce Lipton says, and we go from the forebrain to the hindbrain, and we become less intelligent. So it was an all-out campaign for years. And what was interesting about making it illegal was when this was done, instead of going to the Food and Drug Commerce or Textile Committees, as it should have been, the Marijuana Tax Act was submitted to the House Ways and Means Committee on April 14, 1937. What the House received was a bill prepared in secrecy without outside consultation or input from interest groups, and then erroneously mislabeled so as to prevent the nation's farmers and American medical community from being aware of it. And so that Marijuana Tax Act was basically rubber stamped through approval by committee and Congress without so much as pondering as to the true repercussions of what this terrible miscarriage of truth would manifest in generations to come.
Now, you know, you mentioned something that people may not know about, and that is the uses of cannabis as medicine throughout history up until about 80 years ago. What about that?
It was always used because it always has been used because it's always been known. You know, the interesting thing with cannabis is that when cannabis is grown in a certain geographical location and climate with everything that exists there, it becomes really an antidote. It's called like it's land race. Those cultivars belong to that land race geographically. And it's an antidote to any of the particular ailments that people might have there from the environment, from animals, from plants. And so it becomes one with that. And it also, that's where the different 180 different cannabinoids come into being according to what is needed on that land race, from the climate, from the animals, people living there, from, you know, the animals living there and the plants there. It's always been used as that.
So those local seeds have qualities that actually mitigate the conditions that emerge in that area, antidotes to the various toxins, et cetera.
Exactly.
And so that was lost as the cultivars. So we've had 80 years without this. We've had 80 years without this.
Fortunately, when marijuana was made illegal in 1937, the following year, Canada made it illegal, only for the sole purpose of keeping peace at the border. Well, in about 1999, I'm in the health food store and I see on the shelves hemp butter, hemp seed, hemp oil. I turn the label. It says Manitoba.gov, Manitoba.gov. I went home and for the first time in my life, I used Google and I Googled Manitoba.gov and up came the website from the Canadian government. And the headlines were, "We're thriving. You can too." I love the Canadians, good neighbors. And their whole thing was like, check it out, folks. This isn't about THC. This is about providing food, clothing, shelter, medicine, and biofuel. And that was actually when I was first introduced to hemp, was from that, seeing it in the health food store and seeing that article. And from there, I found out about hempcrete building, which is really the thing I love the most about hemp and where I want to go with hemp. And hempcrete building, I mean, it's amazing. An acre of hemp will, in 120 days, build a 1,000-square-foot home. A 1,000-square-foot home. That is 2 acres, a 2,000-square-foot home in 120 days. And it's a home that is mold-proof, mildew-proof, rodent-proof, insect-proof, fire-resistant, mitigates water. Absolutely astounding. It is approximately seven times lighter than concrete and 7 times stronger than concrete, with zero carbon emissions. On top of that, a hempcrete home in its lifetime will absorb about 30,000 pounds of carbon. And there are actually homes in England that are 700 years old that are hempcrete homes. There is a bridge abutment, a hempcrete bridge abutment in France that they found from the 6th century. This is some durable stuff.
So this is really amazing. So it is multi-purpose product. And so what caused Canada to finally make the break? And
sanity. Their own economy was suffering.
Yeah.
And when they started growing hemp, they started thriving. And that brings me to the economic implications of having hemp be illegal or growing hemp. So in making hemp illegal, everything was switched over to petroleum and forests for goods.
And cotton. Yeah.
Which uses 3 times the water and is the number one source when they started growing cotton of pesticides. And so what happened is all of the things like oil and forests and all of that are highly, highly financially dependent. And so the only people that can get into that game are corporations and extractors, and not exactly a life-enhancing economy. And that's exactly what happened. The 25,000 products that hemp makes and still makes was all just erased as competition on the field for making those same products from toxic, non-biodegradable fuels and non-renewable. And you know, I mean, if you can build a 1,000 square foot home in 120 days and it grows like a weed and is renewable, and then you think about forests that take 20 years, 30 years to grow, and it's not exactly renewable as a quick fix, and it's not even superior. It's not even, and not as long lasting. So this was all a very much a corporate coup and corporate treachery to take the money away from farmers. The thing with hemp is it's always from the grassroots up. It starts in the farming community. The biomass that it has to also then be processed in the community. It is much less expensive than anything that is being produced from oil and that kind of a thing. And everybody in the community benefits from the grassroots up. And that is particularly made evident by Carl Wilkin, an economist in the 40s, who, looking at the whole economy and the farm economy to national economy ratio, he extrapolated then that the national economy is seven times the farm economy. Well, back in the day when it was thriving, the farm economy was, what, 28% of the gross national product times?
Well, if you figure a seven factor of seven, it was 14%.
14%.
And now it's about 5% because of inflation and because of debt.
Inflation and debt, and because the farmers are not allowed to grow this amazing, prolific, you know, product of hemp. Here's some figures that I found on the web. An acre of grapes, which is like a once a year crop, brings in an average, you know, depending on many different variables, 600 an acre. An acre of hemp, again with variables and what type of hemp and the processing that's done right in the community, will bring in 800 to 2500 an acre to the community, the farmers and the community first. And that, from the grassroots up, then it goes, it's then the farmers spend in the economy. We buy the products that are made from that in the economy, and everyone is thriving.
Yeah, this is a contrast to trickle down. This is bubble up.
This is
bubble up. And what happens is, I mean, think about this crop that comes up 1 to 3 times a year, every year. It just keeps renewing. It's like renewable abundance that just keeps producing. And then that gets spent in the economy, and that the farmers spend their money. And here's the point that you were making earlier that I want to highlight, and that is that unlike fossil fuels, which often involves these days being far away, and we're talking about huge manufacturing plants of for rubber and for other synthetics, imagine having a local economy that's based on what grows there because of the biomass. You can't really, it's expensive to transport this. So right there in rural America, in the place that is suffering financially, we can now have, we can now have an actual thriving economy that is guaranteed to work because it's based on a renewable product that can be used for food, turned into clothing, made into shelter, biofuel, and medicine.
Yes.
So now we import. How much do we spend on importing?
We have been since hemp was illegal. We've been importing it at the tune of $70 billion a year, mostly to China, because they're the first to be in the game and to be consistent in it, and then also Europe, and then recently to Canada, which increases the cost of all of the hemp products, which makes it all more expensive and not what it's really supposed to be. And what you just brought up reminded me that it was about 3 or 4 months ago that you sent me an article in the Washington Post. Look it up, folks. And the headlines were U.S. farmers committing suicide at a rate 15 times that of our American veterans. I saw one article, the first article I saw said 15%, the second one said 5%. At any rate, 15 times that of our American veterans. And so,
what, 15% more than our American veterans? Maybe that's
15%
more. It's not the same
than our American veterans.
Okay, clarify.
And so, when I read the article, it spoke first and foremost of the farmers in Iowa, and then also some of the farmers in upstate New York. But pretty much, this was about the farmers in Iowa, and there the it's not only that they aren't growing hemp; it's that has been a they were besieged by Monsanto, and told lies pretty much about crop growth. And what happened is they went on to the Monsanto Roundup glyphosate program, where now what their lands are denatured, because one of the things that glyphosates do is they kill microbes, which you have to have in soil. Any healthy soil that is going to bring forth any life has to have microbes in it, and naturally has microbes in it, except when you've used glyphosates, which kill microbes. So the soil becomes dry. It can't naturally, what glyphosates do is it holds 10 times the water in the soil so that it can compost it, and whatever the weeds or just whatever.
You mean what the microbes do?
Yes, this is what microbes do. And so what happens then?
Oh, we're going to have to wait till we get back from our break to talk more about the ecology and the economy and agricultural industrial hemp.
And more on microbes.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with our third segment with Trudy Behrman talking about agricultural industrial hemp. So let's continue with microbes.
Microbes, hemp and microbes.
Anyway.
So the thing with microbes is to realize part of what has happened to the ecology is this rampant use of pesticides, especially glyphosates, have killed microbes. And that means you don't have microbes in the soil naturally holding 10 times the water in the soil, because microbes are waterborne. And you no longer have the capability of composting organic and inorganic minerals. And one of the things that microbes does, and this is where it becomes very important, is it actually composts and breaks down pesticides, fertilizers, chemicals, toxins, and poisons, all of those things. And hemp, usually when soil has that, it also needs the strength of hemp and the deep roots of hemp to get at all of these things. And the main thing, the other blessed thing with microbes is microbes, when added to soil where the glyphosates killed it, microbes will actually compost glyphosates and clean up the soil. Now, soil that is, like in Iowa, very toxic with glyphosates, the microbes and the hemp will bring it back to life. And in those places, I would recommend growing, pretty obviously, the hemp for seed. And all of that oil, all of that oil can be used for biofuel without any, while it's cleaning the earth, use all of the hemp for seed for biofuel. And if you grow the industrial hemp, you can use that hemp for hempcrete building and fiber.
Say something about biofuel. There's some amazing, we just uncovered some amazing facts about Henry Ford, original diesel engine, et cetera, so this is new information for me.
In the late 1800s, Rudolf Diesel made the diesel engine specifically to be run on hemp seed oil, which is a superior high octane biofuel with, of course, it doesn't need any additives, toxic additives, and so it's clean burning and the engines don't ever gunk up. And back then, that was really the only source of fuel for these diesel engines. And Henry Ford, there's this wonderful rickety video of Henry Ford in about 1925, in the 1920s, where he comes out, he's walking out, you know, in that old video, movie fashion, and walking up to a hemp fiber car that he built with hemp fibers and resins, and a diesel engine run on hemp biofuel. And he comes up and he picks up a sledgehammer, and with all of his might, he hits the hood of this thing. The sledgehammer bounces off and there's not a dent in the actual body. That's how strong hemp fiber and resins are. Now, the other thing with the hemp diesel engine and the biofuel is GM, back in the day it was just GM, came out with Ford to take a look at it, and they didn't want it because that's right when the oil industry was coming to the fore, and they couldn't make as much money with that as they could with the internal combustion engine and gas. And so it switched over. And the thing is, while electric cars are really, really good, there's nothing quite like a diesel engine for torque and power and really powering our trucks and farm equipment. And when you're using hemp biodiesel, which produces 300 gallons per acre of oil, that per acre in 120 days, then you've got a renewable source for biofuel.
Not fossil fuels.
That's right.
Now, there's some good news on the horizon in relation to restoring hemp's appropriate place in terms of the Senate Farm Bill. What do you know about that?
Well, you already know that the Senate has passed the legalization of hemp and the growing of hemp, and also declassified it from a Category 1 drug, finally.
Like heroin.
Like heroin. Yeah. It's like, excuse me, I don't think so. The jig is up on that one. And it's now in the Congress to be, it's like that's the final step. So yeah, we are just about ready to have hemp totally legalized. And I want to thank Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, Republican from Kentucky, because he saw what hemp would do for his people there, not just in all people, but hemp for his people there.
Yeah.
And the veterans that are also, it started with the veteran.
And the veterans, yeah, that's
yes,
really an interesting, remember that movie that we saw, that little movie?
Mm-hmm. There was actually he was a veteran, but he also was driving around in his truck one day in Kentucky, and he looked out the window and he saw that he and everyone else was dirt poor, as he put it. And then they had been that way for a long time. And what happened with him is his brother was released from the service after being shot in the head with his helmet on, and it scrambled his brains. And he was released and with basic benefits, but not the benefits that he really needed. And so all of a sudden, he was saddled with the care of his brother and what to do and what can his brother do. And so he just stuck with the Farm Act that passed back in the Obama era. He stuck a couple hemp seeds, he and his brother, into the ground and their child, and harvested them and made a decorticator and took those hemp fibers off and made a crude spinning wheel, and they spun an American flag. And he took that flag, I believe it was about 3 years ago, to Washington, D.C. on the 4th of July and put it up a flagpole. And it was that act that started Mitch McConnell and woke him up to get hemp legal.
And of course, a great replacement crop for
tobacco.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that things, now that there's an awareness, things are moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So you've taken on this role as an advocate, as an educator. What are your goals and what do you expect to accomplish through this, I love the name, Hemp is for Everyone.
Hemp is for Everyone. I'm not an expert in that sense, because there are people who have been still growing and processing hemp even while it was legal by importing it. And so I'm not by any means an expert, but I am a synthesizer, and it didn't take me long to see how hemp is for everyone in the economy and in the ecology and here where we live on planet Earth, and to thrive and to go from taking care of all of our basic survival needs to actually thrive. And so part of this for me is waking up everyone to that, and it's happening, and just knowing that and seeing this, moving this forward in all aspects as it is, so that they knowingly participate with their farmers, with their community, who's going to be bringing in the decorticators to process the hemp, who is going to bring in all of that equipment. Their whole communities will be thriving. And this is the natural order. And in doing so, everyone will be restoring the economy and the ecology.
Hmm.
Everyone.
So this is really good news, and I think it's important. The education part is really important.
Yeah.
So that people know, you know, and right now, what kind of hemp products can people buy right now that may be substitutes for other things?
The chart. So there's this wonderful chart that talks about just the tip of the iceberg of all the different products that hemp makes. Of course, the it makes industrial textiles, twine, rope, nets, canvas, agrofiber, and it makes paper, printing paper, filter paper, newsprint. It makes building material, fiberboard, insulation, fiberglass, cement, stucco and mortar, foods, salad oil, margarines, food supplements, cooking oils, industrial products, oil paints, and also printing inks, fuel, solvents, lubricants, putty, coatings, personal hygiene products. So we're talking things for shampoos, bath gels, cosmetic lotions. Hemp oil is just quite amazing. And balms. And for seeds, it makes the seeds make food like granola and birdseed, seed cake, good for animal feed, and protein-rich fiber. And also let me see, what else have we got? Feedstock, agricultural benefits we've already spoken of, weed suppression, and you don't need pesticides, grows like a weed, to actually, when you're using hemp, and improvement, soil improvement, and crop rotation. And then the other consumer textiles, apparel, diapers, fabrics, handbags, denim, shoes, fine fabrics, and this is all made from the hemp plant. And you can see where all of this, if you can switch to the other chart, all of this was taken over by the chemical, the corporate industries. All these things then were now made by Cargill and Chevron, obviously the fuel, Chevron, Exxon, Mobil, Conoco, DuPont. And, of course, the Koch brothers appear on this chart way too often. and so all of these things that were made by hemp were taken over by corporations and are, in many respects, also not only not renewable, but toxic. Oh, here's Bayer. What a surprise. And Weyerhaeuser and DuPont, of course, and Monsanto, Merck. So all of the Lilly, all of these things are now made by corporations, which is not sustainable, and we're seeing what it's been doing to the earth. And this can all come back to the economy, and every community will thrive. Every community will thrive. That's what it does in all the lands, in every community. Well, the water will get cleaned up, the air and the soil.
There's so much potential here. What can the people listening do to help educate other people and perhaps learn more for themselves?
Well, one is proliferate this very talk. One of the things that I'm working on is a TED Talk and also a documentary, Hemp is for Everyone. And the other thing that you can simply do is go on the web and just start looking up, if you have whatever your interest is in hemp, is start reading and looking up, you know, Googling that. If it's like you want to grow it and you know, like my interest is hempcrete building. And so there's lots of really good hempcrete building videos. It is so simple. Hempcrete has only three, for instance, has only three ingredients. It has the ground up shiv, which is herd, and it has lime and water. That's it.
Lime?
That's it. Lime.
Does it come in any other flavors?
No, just lime.
Okay, just lime.
And it's like, this is it, you know, and it's like easy to build your own home. Communities that need low cost housing. It's like this, grow your own hemp, lime, and water. You can build three different types of hempcrete homes. The R rating on these homes is much higher than the industry standard R rating for insulation and this kind of thing. And easy for people to use, zero carbon. You have a non-toxic building site, and you have people who can grow their own and build their own homes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we really have a revitalization of everything mm-hmm. in a way that's going to have a lot smaller ecological footprint.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, they've said it before, Swami, you're proposing a sane world. You must be crazy.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to add two things to that.
Yes, go ahead. But
also, where I'm going with this is California has laws that they passed, which are very elegant, on worker-owned co-ops. This would be great if this was across the United States, worker-owned co-ops. And the next thing is state banks. That will totally, with the hemp, totally restore the economy.
Well, we'll talk to Ellen Brown about the state bank. She's going to be my guest in a week or
right.
two. So
yeah.
we're on the same page. Trudy, I want to thank you so much for everything that you've done, for your enthusiasm about this issue. Please circulate this this interview. This is Steve Behrman of Wiki Politiki. We've been talking about how hemp is for everyone. Come on, people. Let my people grow. Thank you, Wiki Politiki, and we'll talk to you next week.